From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As former Vice President Joe Biden remains the only Democratic candidate left standing after an extraordinarily large field that crowded debate stages just a few months ago, the question arises, can Biden truly beat Donald Trump this November? In spite of recent polling showing Trump losing to Biden, my guest, Norman Solomon, worries that, quote, Biden is idling in the cockpit of a political aircraft with one wing. Norman Solomon is co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org. His books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. He was a pledged delegate for Bernie Sanders at the 2016 Democratic National Convention. His latest article is entitled, Joe Biden Needs an Intervention, an open letter to DNC Chair Tom Perez. Welcome to the program, Norman.
Thank you.
So let's start with what's in the news right now, which is this sexual assault allegation facing Joe Biden. I don't want to get into the details of this allegation because it is an allegation. There's legal issues. But for days, you had Joe Biden just not responding to this huge story at all. And then he finally came out and made a statement and gave an interview in which he unequivocally denied it. He's had the benefit of some prominent women in the Democratic Party sort of backing him. But how do you just assess as a candidate how Biden has behaved around this pretty serious allegation he faces?
He's navigating a really difficult terrain, a lot of trapdoors and minefields, and he's dealing really with several different worlds, you might say. One is the conventional circle the wagons, protect our candidate, the sort of reflex that partisans and party apparatchiks engage in. And then there are people who have an orientation to have a single standard of human rights, of support for women, for people who are on the low end of the power structure and don't get heard and have been subjected to injustices for as long as anybody's been alive and much before. And so I think there's basically a clash between the protect our guy in this case versus those who say, no, if you apply a certain standard to Brett Kavanaugh, you should apply the same standard to Joe Biden. And then sort of floating within and between those two realms are the mass media who love a good fight.
Right. I was going to ask you just about that because there is more coverage now about what about this assault allegation. But when it first, you know, came up, the mainstream media, the papers like The Times and The Washington Post simply refused to cover it. And then Biden essentially became the presumptive nominee, or it looked like he was, you know, going to be the presumptive nominee. Then they began covering it, but essentially completely whitewashing it and brushing everything under the rug. But the story continued to, stay alive. And now their coverage has improved. But now we have no other candidates left.
Yeah, the story really has percolated where first it was independent media. And gradually, as more sources were reached and came forward, it's become impossible for the mass media to ignore. Politically, I think that it's from the standpoint of those of us, and I'm certainly one of the many millions who believe it's imperative to defeat Donald Trump in November, it's a mess. And it's in many ways the worst of some conceivable worlds because from a progressive standpoint, Joe Biden is a terrible candidate on the basis of content and his record of more than four decades of aligning with the war makers, with the corporate power, with the credit card companies, with the bankers, on and on, talking liberal quite often, aligning with Southern segregationists, against busing in the 70s for school desegregation, et cetera, et cetera. His role, pivotal role in the crime bill that has fueled mass incarceration. So we have this candidate who is antithetical in many ways to progressive values at a basic level, while certainly he is not nearly as bad as Donald Trump. And at the same time, we have a circumstance where his candidacy may be unraveling. And as you noted, it's pretty far along in the process where he's been able to push almost everybody, essentially everybody now, out of the race against him. So we're at a very negative juncture in terms of moving forward with more positive progressive politics in the presidential race.
And so much is at stake. What's also extraordinary is the many liberal supporters of Biden and progressives who want to see Trump defeated have sadly resorted to maligning Tara Reid. There's been articles showing that, you know, she did something or another. She might have lied about one thing. She might have taken advantage of something about something else. But if you're going to go down that road, you know, and some have even said, well, even if Biden may be someone who sexually assaults women, he is not responsible for the tens of thousands of people that have died of coronavirus. If you go down that road, it's very easy to turn around and say, well, if you look at the Iraq War and Biden's role in it, if you look at all of the times Biden has lied and contradicted himself and taken positions that have been problematic. So it just doesn't seem to be a good defense of Biden to attack Tara Reid.
This is really, I think, a paradigm, a pattern and dynamic that makes so many people hate partisan politics because we could look at so many issues. And Sonali, I think we could spend hours with really sharp, clear examples of how during the last couple of decades, when the shoe was on the other foot, Republicans and Democrats in Congress and the White House say the opposite things in both instances, in a pair of events, swearing up and down that this is a matter of basic principle. And I think that at this point, this is a clash between the single standard and the partisan fog machine. And where that goes, I don't know. I think that clearly the Republicans are much quicker to fall in line. You know, the so-called leadership and the base, the line comes down, there's nothing like winning. There were denunciations of Trump 4 years ago when he wins. They're just being good soldiers for his horrific policies. Democratic Party activists, and particularly the base, were not so much that way. I mean, there's a lot of it. And if you were to read some very Democratic Party leadership aligned media outlets online, sure, they're following that line. But there's a lot of dissension and there's a lot of insistence that we not corrupt ourselves intellectually or morally by throwing Joe Biden's accuser under the bus with standards that we would have denounced if it was being done by the other party.
Norman, you wrote a piece that was recently published on Common Dreams, an open letter to DNC Chair Tom Perez entitled Joe Biden Needs an Intervention. In it, you write, Biden is idling in the cockpit of a political aircraft with one wing. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's very memorable to me. I was the first Democratic convention I went to was in Atlanta in 1988. And Jesse Jackson, who came in second in that race against Michael Dukakis, gave a beautiful speech where he said, it takes two wings to fly, because at that point, the progressive, what became the Rainbow Coalition forces, had been defeated. And the, as usual, the supposed smartest guys and gals in the room, the Dukakis folks, who had their later parallels in the John Kerry campaign and the Hillary Clinton campaign, they were so smart and they felt they didn't need the left. And so they really dismissive of the Jesse Jackson forces at that point and on into November. Dukakis was 18 points ahead in the national polling coming out of that 1988 Democratic convention. And of course, he lost to George Herbert Walker Bush. Now, of course, it looks like a much closer race. And yet, for the most part, Joe Biden and his forces are ignoring the, really, I think, the wisdom that at that stage of a campaign, when you have a nominee, Jesse Jackson was offering way back in 1988. Joe Biden is proceeding, aside from just some toss-off rhetoric and crumbs he's throwing in progressive directions. Biden is proceeding, as they say, sort of on the runway, metaphorically, of course, in the cockpit. He wants to fly this general election campaign aircraft with one wing, with a centrist corporate wing of the party, and really have little giving. He's actually giving short shrift to progressive base that's shown itself to have major strength behind Bernie Sanders. I say this with no pleasure whatsoever, because I think it's going to be essential for progressives in swing states, and there are a dozen of them in this country, to use the only instrument available to prevent a second term for Donald Trump. And that would be in those 12 swing states to vote for Joe Biden. But Biden's making that very difficult. He still thinks he's going to fly with that one wing.
There was a piece in the New York Times recently. It was an opinion piece by Michelle Cottle, a member of the editorial board of the Times, entitled, "Joe Biden is not hiding, he's lurking." And she made the case that he's essentially not getting in the way of an incumbent who is digging his own grave. This is sort of setting aside the issue of the Sanders supporters, which I want to get to in a minute. But just the fact that he has not taken a very active role. And yes, of course, we're all under lockdown because of the coronavirus, but there is a way to be in the news cycle and to speak eloquently and aggressively about issues that matter to you, as Sanders has been doing, even though he's not even in the race officially. What do you make of this assessment that Biden is apparently letting Trump dig his own grave?
Well, where have we heard that before? In 2016, Trump was just going to defeat himself, and we saw how that went. This is a typical, might I say, a liberal and so-called moderate Democratic Party aligned line that we are still getting. And I think it's extremely dangerous. It's lazy, and it's a way to try to bypass and avoid the necessity of articulating a set of policies, a program that isn't just to stop Trump, which is part of what needs to be asserted, but also to have a different future. Biden and that Cottle and other sort of liberal and apologist commentators are basically saying back to the future. You know, if only we can rewind the tape, which is what Biden is saying, go back to the good old days of the Obama era. Well, it was those so-called good old days of the Obama era that led to Trump, because Obama let the houses sink after the crisis, economic crisis in 2008. He came into office, he took care of and bailed out Wall Street. He populated his cabinet with big Wall Street operators, and he let so many people go down in the lower middle class and middle class and poor people, and many lost their homes. They were underwater and they sank. The prescription that we're being offered now is to say, well, let's go back to those good old days, ignoring the fact that for so many people, because of corporate power in this country, those good old days were not good at all.
So how could Biden win over that critical part of the electorate that got so excited about Bernie Sanders? It's pretty significant. It's one that hasn't just grown up overnight. It's a continuation of a coalition that began to be built ahead of the 2016 election. And there is, not surprisingly, a deep sense of disappointment among Bernie Sanders supporters.
Yes, well, for one thing, Joe Biden could eject from his inner circle of economic advisors Lawrence Summers, who is, as The Nation magazine recently said, is a plutocrat-loving economist. He has a terrible record, not only of flagrant sexism in his dealings with associates, but also profoundly in terms of his economic policies that he's pursued. He has expressed, in line with his economic outlook, great admiration for Milton Friedman, the Chicago boy that inspired the sort of terrible economic policies that have been imposed in places like Chile and to some extent in the United States, Thatcherism and all the rest of it. This is trickle-down, a war on low-income people, moderate-income and middle-class people, really. And yet Lawrence Summers is now a key economic advisor for Joe Biden. There's one decision that Joe Biden could make that would show he's serious about flying this election vehicle, this aircraft, into November with two wings. And that would be related to his choice of a vice presidential candidate, a running mate. There's only one really who could thread that needle, be taken very seriously in the larger national political arena, and make a clear, tangible step to bring in progressive voters on a real basis. And that is Elizabeth Warren. And I say that as a continuous Bernie Sanders supporter since 2016, really to the present moment. I'm not all that enamored with Elizabeth Warren. I'm less enamored with her than I was a few months ago, because of some of her actions on the campaign trail this year. But still, she has some bona fide records to point to in terms of fighting Wall Street, fighting the power of the elites, the plutocracy, and the oligarchy. Really, there's nobody else on the short or long list that the mass media keep bringing up for a VP choice. There's nobody else on that list who is progressive, really. And if you look at the records, even of those who are touted as being, oh, it would be a step towards a progressive base, they're just not there. It's mostly hype.
What about this issue of pledged delegates for the candidates? Even though Bernie Sanders has officially dropped out of the race, his name remains on ballots in some states. There was, of course, the huge disappointment with the New York primary being canceled, where basically, his potential delegates that he might have gotten were stolen. First, explain how that works. What did the state of New York do, and how did that impact the strategy that Sanders was taking going into the Democratic National Convention?
Well, for an overview, I think it's fair to say that among the Democratic parties at the state levels in this country, New York has perhaps the most corrupt. I mean, it's not only that in Albany in recent years there have been indictments and convictions for essentially suitcases full of money going to top Democratic legislators in the state legislature there in Albany, but also just the way that the Democratic Party operates in the state is top down. We could remember that Joe Crowley, who was fourth in line to be a speaker in the U.S. Congress in Queens in the Bronx, he was a very powerful figure. And it was because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez mounted this really surprise campaign that it was such a stunning victory. It wasn't just a defeat of a Democratic incumbent, but an extremely powerful one who's part of that fairly corrupted Democratic Party apparatus in the state. So that's a context for what happened, where really with the not just wink and nod, but actions, something inserted in an extraneous item in a budget bill, passed by the legislature, but inserted by Cuomo, Governor Andrew Cuomo basically orchestrated to have election commissioners say, oh, there's no opposition to Joe Biden, so let's just take him off the ballot. Let's take Bernie Sanders off the ballot. Let's say there's no voting to be done on presidential primary matter in New York. And of course, Bernie Sanders supporters are outraged, because that takes all of the New York delegates away from Bernie Sanders that certainly would have been elected. So that said, and just very recently, in recent days, we've had an agreement struck between the Biden and Sanders campaign with ambiguous wording about what's going to happen in New York. So it's really goes under the category of to the victor comes the spoils.
So let's talk about that agreement. It made the news on Thursday that Biden has agreed to let Sanders keep hundreds of delegates that he would have otherwise forfeited by dropping out of the race. What is the political leverage that Sanders gets from keeping these delegates? How does he use that to influence Biden, but even more importantly, to help Biden broaden his tent so that he can get on with the important task of defeating Trump?
Well, Bernie gets some leverage from the agreement. And I think, you know, an overarching reality that is so important is that really progressives in many ways, and it's certainly true of Bernie Sanders, he's trying to prevent Biden from crashing and burning. He's trying to pull Biden in a direction where he actually could get votes, more votes from progressives. There was just a Suffolk University USA Today poll published just in the last days showing that nearly one out of four Sanders supporters say that they don't have any intention right now to vote for Biden. That would be catastrophic for the Biden campaign against Trump. So that's a backdrop. That said, it's not just New York at stake in this agreement, but in many states, including California, it has been an open question whether the one-third of the delegates who would be due Bernie Sanders as a candidate would actually be denied to him, because the claim has come from many party officials that Bernie should forfeit those delegates because he's no longer a candidate. But in early April, when Bernie pulled out of the race in the sense of suspending his campaign, he didn't entirely pull out. He said, "I will continue to be on the ballot in every upcoming state. I will continue to seek delegates and get as many as possible." But the effort has been made now by party power brokers to say, well, you're not a candidate, so you don't get apportioned your statewide allocation of delegates to the national convention that you would have had if you were an active candidate. That was the pretext in New York for canceling the presidential primary part of the ballot, and that was being invoked around the country. So, long story short, the deal that was just struck has what I think is a somewhat jury-rigged, cockamamie apparatus spelled out, where those Bernie delegates from a statewide apportionment would be technically Biden delegates, but those seats would be filled by Bernie Sanders supporters. And a backdrop of all that is to report out of committee to the floor, or what might be the digital equivalent of a floor of the national convention, you need 25% of the delegates to the convention and on the committee. So it's sort of a domino effect. It's why it's important to emphasize to voters still coming up at primaries, like Oregon, for example, where Bernie has a lot of momentum, it's important to vote for Bernie Sanders, because that could affect the power balance at the convention.
So essentially, this sort of strategic move is aimed at making the Democratic Party and its candidate more progressive. Ultimately, though, will that be enough to take on this incumbent president? There was the same kinds of arguments taking place 4 years ago, a lot of bad blood between and among progressives, because there was a sense that Hillary Clinton didn't have to work to win over voters, that voters ought to have picked her because the choice between her and Trump was so obvious. And it seems like we're sadly hurtling down that same path. And you're getting Biden supporters who, rather than pushing their candidate to do better, are browbeating voters into picking him because the alternative in their mind, of course, is so much worse.
Whatever I might think as an activist, and I might say, and I do say, if you live in a swing state, you should, as the only way to prevent another 4 years of Trump, you should vote for Biden in those swing states. And I strongly believe that. That doesn't mean progressives will turn out and vote for Joe Biden against Trump. And the onus is on Biden to broaden his campaign. I think the most convincing, as I said, would be Warren on the ticket, but in other ways as well, and make public commitments for what they're worth on measures like Medicare for All. We have an astonishing gap between the Democratic Party base and Joe Biden on Medicare for All, where he refuses, even after what the pandemic has shown, where millions of people are being tossed off their insurance, yes, under Obamacare, we still have Biden refusing to say that he supports Medicare for All. He still says he doesn't. And yet the polling shows 88% of Democrats support Medicare for All. A majority of voters in this country support Medicare for All. So we have this huge gap, and it's not only morally wrong, but it's politically stupid.
Well, Norman, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. I'm sure we'll be speaking several times between now and November again. We'll post a link to your Common Dreams article from our website. Thanks so much, Norman.
Thanks, Sonali. Thanks a lot.
My guest has been Norman Solomon, co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org. His books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. He was a pledged delegate for Bernie Sanders at the 2016 DNC. Norman's latest article is titled Joe Biden Needs an Intervention, an open letter to DNC chair Tom Perez. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.